Broadcasting from the secret military base in Summit Township. This is On the Docket with Connor Dockery.
Who do you think you are?
Weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. Presented by Knutson's Sporting Goods, your outdoor convenience store. Kettlebell Hotspot, where your functional fitness begins. Bud Light, Bella Notte Ristorante, and Tri-County Water. That's good water.
Day. This is On the Docket. Lots to break down from over the weekend. We've got the Lions, we've got the Tigers, got some college football. We're going to kick off today's segment with the Detroit Tigers. So they come away with the weekend split, which was how disappointing yesterday's game was. I will say still an absolute win for this Tigers team. I mean, that's all you can do, right? When you're in a postseason and you are in a postseason series on the road to start. I mean, you got to split the first two games at least. And now the Tigers going home. Next two here in Detroit. And when you look at it that way, I mean, this is now a three-game series. A best of three. With two of the three games in Detroit. So, first, we're going to go with the first game. Let's break down the first game this weekend for the Detroit Tigers. So, this one, another case of what we have been seeing in terms of the bats for the Tigers, with getting guys on, but you can't get that big swing to drive in runs. The Tigers consistently getting some guys on, even early. They had some chances with several guys on base, but not able to drive them home. And, you know, I always say solo home runs aren't going to kill you. Seattle takes a 1-0 lead. Julio Rodriguez, we're going to be saying his name a lot in this segment. And then Kerry Carpenter, love when this guy hits postseason home runs. And I think that stat is insane. Kerry Carpenter, all time, is 5-for-11 against George Kirby, the starting pitcher for Seattle in that game one. All of them home runs. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, that is the definition of having somebody's number. So he makes it 2-1 Detroit. Julio Rodriguez strikes again in the sixth with a one-run single. Makes it 2-2, and then that brings it to extras. And Zach McKinstry able to come through with the big one-run single, just sneaks up the middle. And the Tigers able to shut things down. With Keider Montero. Obviously, Will Vest had pitched the previous two innings, so, you know, really risky, especially in the playoffs, using a guy like that in a third inning in the same game. So, Keider Montero coming in and getting the save, who was a guy that I speculated was going to get the start in game one. It was obvious it was going to come from the bullpen in game one, and then Scoob will get in the start in game two. They decided to go with Troy Melton. AJ Hinch with Troy Melton in the first game. And man, starter Troy Melton and reliever Troy Melton. I mean, these are like two totally different guys. Troy Melton did fantastic I thought in that first game, one run, just two hits, one walk, four strikeouts in four innings. So good stuff. I think this guy definitely has some potential to be a rotation guy in the future. Definitely not in the bullpen. Just doesn't really look that good in the bullpen. But lots of different relievers. Of course, Rafael Montero didn't do good in that first game. But everybody else really solid in that first game. The Tigers, seven hits. Again, consistently getting guys on. You know, it's, you know, should hopefully happen eventually. But they came through. It mattered most. Got the 3-2 win, and this put the Tigers in a really good spot. It's like, all right, you took the first game, game two. You got the likely back-to-back AL Cy Young winner, Tarek Skubal, starting. Tigers are in a really good spot. And yesterday's game, man, just such a letdown for the Tigers. I mean, Tarek Skubal, I mean, he pitched well. But, I mean, I keep saying that. Solo home runs aren't going to kill you. And those are the only two runs that he allowed, those two solo bombs to Jorge Polanco. And they were saying on the broadcast, felt very pro-Mariners, by the way, on the broadcast. I just got to point that out. Game one as well. That Jorge Polanco, the only player this year that hit multiple home runs against Tarek Skubal in the same game. But again, both solo home runs, so not bad. I mean, this Mariners team, very similar to the Yankees. This team thrives off of hitting home runs. And if you can limit them to just solo home runs, then you're going to be in a good spot. And the Tigers, we mentioned all postseason, they were in a situation where, you know, time and time again, they get base runners on, but just can't get that big hit to bring in any runs. But in this second game last night, that they just didn't get base runners on. I mean, it's hard to come through with that big hit when you don't even have base runners on. And it felt like the whole batting lineup, really to me, it felt like everybody was hitting like an 8 or 9 guy in the order. Like everybody just looked uncomfortable in the box. Lots of swings and misses on pitches. I don't believe that they, you know, should have struggled that much to get contact with. I don't know. Just a really, really bad day at the office for the Tigers offense yesterday. But all the same, they had a chance at the end. A huge, huge 2-run hit by Spencer Torkelson to tie the game at 2. But unfortunately, the Tigers giving the lead right back. Julio Rodriguez again. I mean, this guy, he's been a killer for the Mariners in this series. And then the Tigers bats quiet again in the ninth. I mean, you need run support. At the end of the day, you need run support. I mean, 3 runs allowed by the entire pitching staff, I mean, that's good. It's a low number. But with the Tigers, you know, scoring this few runs, I mean, in the postseason, it's really only been one inning that they've gone off on. One inning. Not specifically just one game, just one inning that they've gone off on. If you ignore that 4-run inning that the Tigers had, the 7th inning in the knockout blow clinching game against Cleveland, the Tigers have only scored 3 or less runs each playoff game. 2-1 win. So they scored 2 runs the first game against Cleveland. 1 run only in the second game besides that 7th inning. 2 runs. And then 3 runs in game 1. 2 runs last night. I mean, that's really difficult. Really not sustainable. You have to get more runs than that because forcing your pitchers, especially, you know, it's, you know, 3 runs from game 1. That's an outlier for this Tigers team. You got it. Otherwise, it's pretty much like 1 or 2 runs. That's a lot of stress on your pitching staff to expect, no, demand that you have to allow, you know, 1 run only or 0 runs because, you know, the bats aren't really just going to come through, go off for that many runs. I mean, that's a lot of that's difficult, especially in the postseason. A lot of great hitters on this Seattle team. So, yeah, just unfortunately last night, the bats quiet. Not able to hold the tie late, and series is tied 1-1. And I know it's easy to be, like, discouraged, like, ah. I always say it's a unforgivable sin for this Tigers team to drop a game when Tarek Skubal is pitching, and pitching well. And that happened, of course, in a playoff game. It just, it stings extra when it happens in the playoffs, when the Tigers lose a game that Tarek Skubal pitches. But as I started the segment with, again, look at the bright side. You came in needing, you know, okay, minimum, Tigers need to take one of these games, and they did that. You would have thought going in, like if I told myself going into this series that, hey, looking forward on Monday, you're going to look at a Tigers 1-1 series going home for games 3 and 4, I would have assumed, of course, they probably drop game 1, win game 2 with Skubal pitching. That's not how it worked out, and that is a big blown opportunity for this Tigers team to now be going home with a 2-0 lead and only needing to win one at home in the next two games. But that's still an absolute win in this playoff series. As I mentioned, it now becomes a best of three with two of these three games at home for the Tigers. You know, I'm not going to complain. As bad as they looked last night, offensively, I mean, I'm going to take it. So Tigers 1-1. I do have another note here as well. And I know I'm not the only one who noticed this. But my Lord, was the strike zone calls by the home plate umpire in game 1 just horrific. Miserable day at the office for home plate umpire Alex Tosi. I mean, I felt like I was going crazy in that first game with how many balls that were like at least 2 or 3 inches off and they were called a strike. Did Seattle's hitters get some of those strike calls? Yeah, but it felt very disproportionate, like in favor of disproportionately against Detroit's hitters. It felt like the Detroit bats were consistently getting a lot of those pitches, you know, 2-3 inches off the plate called for strikes. And it was crazy. As a matter of fact, I mean, there was one that I remember in the later innings. Riley Green at the plate, he doesn't even take the bat off his shoulders. He looks at all four pitches that are off the plate, but it's a 2-2 count. I mean, that's completely abysmal. And there's a great account on Twitter, Ump Scorecards. He has a website as well, umpscorecards.com. Gave out his grade for Alex Tosi in game 1. Of course, Detroit did win, but 75% called strike accuracy. 14 of 56 called strikes were true balls. Like, man, that is brutal for any baseball game, but especially in the playoffs. I mean, this guy... Am I in favor of the full robot umpires? No. I do like the challenge system coming in place next season. But this guy, at the very least, this guy should not ever call another postseason game, because that is absolutely brutal. Again, that's bad for a regular season game, but for the playoffs, that's abysmal. And I think I saw another stat of like 2,500 total baseball games this season, only like 25 were worse than what the guy called last night. So horrible strike zone, but the Tigers able to overcome that, able to get that game 1 win. Drop yesterday, 1-1 series going into tomorrow's game 3. And what's pretty interesting is, we'll talk a little bit about this more tomorrow. I was going in thinking that it was going to be a rotation of, okay, bullpen, which we got Troy Melton in game one, then Scooble, Mize, Flaherty, Scooble. I thought that was pretty much what everybody expected, but looks like AJ Hinch gonna switch things up. Gonna go with Jack Flaherty actually tomorrow. Move him up one game and then go with Casey Mize in game four. And then still wrap up the series if it gets to that point, game five, with Tarek Skubal. But at the end of the day, this is now a best of three series, and the Tigers playing two of these three games at home. So even though last night looked brutal, I mean, this is still a favorable spot for the Tigers to be in. Now the rest of the show, Football React Monday. Back to your regularly scheduled Football React Monday. Detroit Lions, I don't think they really looked great yesterday, but at the end of the day, still a double-digit win against the Cincinnati Bengals. Breaking that one down next. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Bellinote Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and Kettlebell Hotspot. With an expert coach, was the Team USA Kettlebell Sports Lifting representative with over 20 years of experience. This is where you go to build raw functional strength and core stability without the wear and tear of a normal workout. What are you waiting for? Join the team today, Kettlebell Hotspot, in Spring Arbor, where your functional fitness begins. Detroit Lions victorious. They've won four straight games. Now tied atop the entire NFC, entire NFL for that matter, with a 4-1 record. And we've got the full Lions highlights.
Second and 9 from the Bengal 10. Goff up under center, turns, play action fake, looks, throws left side. It is caught. Laporta inside the 5, fighting at the 2, diving to the end zone, touchdown Detroit Lions. Sam Laporta doing work after the catch that time. 10 yards on the connection, and the Lions are first on the board. He's going to take the shotgun snap about 3 yards deep in the end zone to our right. He's got Chase Brown, the back to his right, fakes to him. Browning wants to throw, looks, throws out there. It is intercepted by the Lions. Amik Robertson's got it inside the 20 and down at the 17-yard line. Pass was intended for Jamar Chase. Amik just jumped right in front of him and said, I'll take that. Lions with a takeaway. Second and goal from the 3. 3 tight ends set for the Lions. Wow. They go Wildcat. Yeah. David Montgomery takes the direct snap. He's going to throw it to the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Brock Wright.
Who?
Brock Wright. David Montgomery back in his hometown of Cincinnati with a touchdown pass. Brownie's got it back and looking, loading, throwing deep downfield. It is up for grabs. Oh, and goodness. It is going to be picked up by the Lions. Amik Robertson's got it again. No checking. It's Kirby Joseph that time. Kirby under that one makes the grab. That is another interception for Kirby Joseph. Browning's got it. Wants to throw. Looks. Got time in the pocket. Throws down. Yes. Picked off. Alex Anzalone. Come back left side. Anzalone inside the 35. Inside the 30. And runs out of bounds at the 29-yard line. Alex Anzalone with a takeaway. That is the third of the day for this Lions defense. Jared takes the snap. Quick throw left side. Got it complete. That is caught by Gibbs. Picks up a block. Gets to the 15. Gets to the 10. Gets to the 5. Gibbs inside the 2. To the 1. To the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, baby, what a run by Jahmyr Gibbs. And he got some big help. Isaac Tesla with a block. Sam Laporta with a block. And the Lions take it to the house. Goff turns, fakes the give to Demo. Throws, he got it complete. That is Laporta up the right sideline. 30, 35, 40. Laporta 45. Hesitates to the 50. Still going at the 45. Jeez. And down to the 40-yard line. Sam Laporta just running through Bengals down the field. And that's a huge gain down to the 41-yard line. Goff, play clock at 5, will take the direct snap. There it is. Jared gives it to Montgomery. Bounces it left. Montgomery to the 5. Montgomery to the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. The Cincinnati kid is packing the stat sheet tonight. He's got a pass for a TD, and he's got a rushing TD. Goff takes. Sets in the pocket, throws end zone. Isaac right. Tesla, touchdown Detroit Lions. The rookie hauls it in and the Lions extend their lead. Browning takes the shotgun snap, drifts back into the end zone and throw. Gonna get hit, gonna get sacked. That is a safety. Derek Barnes back home and making himself at home. Got the sack, put two more on the board for Detroit. Goff takes the knee and that's it. Two teams will meet out in the middle of the field to say job well done. Job better done on this day by the Detroit Lions, who win it by a score of 37-24 for their fourth consecutive victory, running their record now to 4-1 on the season.
So for the first three quarters, this was a great Lions game. Executing on offense, making plays, importantly forcing turnovers defensively, and the Lions able to run out to a huge lead, but outscored 21-9 in that fourth quarter. 21 of the 24 points by the Bengals coming in that fourth quarter. So, I mean, the thing I'll say is it really did feel like the team kind of collectively took their foot off the gas in that fourth quarter. You know, when it was evident the Lions would be well on their way to winning this game, they did. And even when the Bengals started to rack up those scores late and they came within two possessions, they never really truly felt like a threat, honestly. Like, the game still was, like, locked up. And at the end of the day, when the Lions needed the plays, they got them. Got those big defensive stops. You got the safety. And Amon-Ra St. Brown specifically. I feel like whenever this team needs a big play on offense, this guy delivers, makes a big catch and, you know, stuff like that. That Jared Goff, Amon-Ra St. Brown connection definitely comes through in those circumstances. But I don't know. I feel like this is probably the worst Lions game since that opening week game against the Packers. But, I mean, they still were able to get a double-digit win, still able to hang 37 points on the board. And in terms of the offense, I mean, you could just see what happens, how much of an impact it is when, you know, teams are able to get in and get to Jared Goff, force him into, you know, rush decisions or, you know, obviously sack him a couple times. You know, there's that play earlier in the game that, you know, Goff fumbled it as a result of that pressure. And what's the thing that it was in common? It was coming from the left side of the line. And I don't think anybody ever questioned what Taylor Decker brings to this team, but boy, did the Lions miss him yesterday. Taylor Decker out with a injury, and it was Giovanni Manu in his place. And not saying it was all on him for the Bengals consistently breaking through on that side of the line and getting to Jared Goff, but I think it says more about Taylor Decker and just how good he is at left tackle than it does Giovanni Manu. So that was probably the biggest takeaway I had offensively. But defensively, I mean, this is not a good Bengals offense. They have been miserable since Joe Burrow went down with that toe injury. And, I mean, look at some of these stats right here. 365 total yards for the Lions, 322 for the Bengals. And they're 4 of 11 on third down. It's a pretty high rate for the Bengals. So, yeah, just I feel like the Lions just really kind of took their foot off the gas pedal at the end of the game. But, I mean, they were able to do enough to that point to come away victorious. And that just shows that even when this team, you know, doesn't feel like it played well, they're still able to get the job done. And still able to come home with a double-digit win, a multi-possession win, which I'll definitely take. Jared Goff, great again. Obviously was sacked 4 times after being sacked 0 times the 3 games before. 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, 19 of 23 passing for 258 yards. Of course, had that lost fumble, not necessarily on him, but a great game again for Jared Goff. David Montgomery grew up in the Cincinnati area, born there, family in attendance. Really good to see him turn in a big game, 65 yards rushing touchdown, even had that passing touchdown. Nice little trick play there from the Lions. Jahmyr Gibbs, 54 yards. Amon-Ra St. Brown, another century mark game. Exactly 100 receiving yards on 8 catches. 92 for LaPorta. He had a big game. Of course, Isaac Tesla. Love when this guy checks in. It's crazy to see him make a catch with 2 hands on the football instead of just 1 for the touchdown, but I'll definitely take it. And Jake Browning, yikes. Does not look like a good backup for Joe Burrow. 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. 26 of 40 passing. Just not good. But at the end of the day, the Lions, they take the win. They improve to 4-1, which, again, that's tied for the best record in all of football, and which is pretty surprising as well. You'd thought that there was going to be at least 1 undefeated team still standing, but the Philadelphia Eagles, they collapse late. They fall to the Denver Broncos at home, and then the Bills. This was a shocker. Bills falling 23-20 to the Patriots. Don't think many people had the Patriots in that game. But the Bills and Eagles were the last 2 undefeated teams. And there are now 6 teams with a 4-1 record. Colts, Niners, Bills, Eagles, Buccaneers, and Lions. And of course, the Buccaneers and Lions, that's going to be a matchup here in 2 weeks. The Lions' next matchup is the Kansas City Chiefs, who we will obviously know more about after tonight. They have the Monday Night Football game tonight against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So there you go. No more undefeated teams, but there is still 1 winless team. And that is Aaron Glenn's New York Jets, who just look... that's not a good football team. They get spanked by the Cowboys. Just a complete rout at one point. I mean, obviously they've lost to the Buccaneers and Bills, both good teams, but otherwise Steelers and Dolphins make up their other losses. And granted, I don't think the Cowboys are as bad a team that we thought they would be going into the season, but still not a great team. So the Lions, number 1 in the NFC North by a game and a half, if you can consider that. Of course, with the Packers 2-1-1 in second place, Vikings 3-2, Bears 2-2. Of course, the Bears and the Packers with a bye week this week. So the Lions in a good spot, but they got another test, another big, tough road test coming up on Sunday with the Kansas City Chiefs, one of the toughest places to play in the National Football League. At Arrowhead, and Dan Campbell, obviously post-game press conference, had some interesting comments. We'll take a listen on the other side. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bellanote Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and Polly's Country Market. See the deals online, country-markets.com, and see the deals in store. And save even more while you're at it with My Market Rewards. It's easy to sign up. Just talk to your cashier when you check out, or just plug in your phone number at the self-checkout, and you're signed up and ready to start saving. Country-markets.com, that's Polly's Country Market. Go into your nearest location, convenient locations throughout Jackson County. Dan Campbell, of course, had some similar thoughts as probably last week with the win. You know, not perfect, but the Lions still doing some really, really good things in this game. Here's Dan Campbell to open his post-game press conference from yesterday's win.
How we doing? Good. You know, I told the team, listen, man, I that's a good win. That's a good win. We'll take that. Man, do we have things to clean up? Was it perfect? No, it wasn't. But man, we did what we needed to do, came in here, and I thought our guys were ready to compete. We fought, and once again, the best thing we did, we played complimentary football. And that's what great teams do, man. And we always find a way, man. I thought our defense came out hot. They set the tone for the game. Thought Shep, man, had an outstanding plan. Those guys were ready to go. What do we have, three takeaways? Three takeaways, sudden change stops that we had. You know, we throw the pick on offense. They're able to shut them down. We get the safety, you know. And so I just, man, I thought it was awesome. And then, you know, we end up, when we need help, the offense responds. We go all the way down the field, finish that out, and really just kind of open it back up again. So really proud of the guys. And, you know, it's a good win. And now we got Kansas City coming up. Look, just, I haven't seen everything. Obviously, I'll know more tomorrow, but... You know, I thought Alex was all over the field, came up big for us. You know, I thought Laporta was outstanding. St. Brown was outstanding. You know, Derek Barnes, seven tackles, the safety, all over the field. There's just a number of guys that we'll get to, but I just know with my own eyes, you could feel it and you could see it. And quarterback played, man, very efficient football. It wasn't better than David Montgomery. You know, David had a perfect quarterback rating, but it was very close by a point, so...
So, again, I thought the overall good game, you know, rough in terms of allowing Jared Goff to get sacked four times and, you know, had the lost fumble, but great in the aspect of the Lions defense consistently setting up the offense with short fields as they did the week before against the Cleveland Browns, able to force three turnovers with those three interceptions, come up with two of your own sacks. And also forced two fumbles as well. Don't recover any of them, but you forced two fumbles all the same. So, you know, still a lot to like about last night's game, but, you know, I think just at the end of the day, just really taking their foot off the gas at the end of the game and start to slightly have the Bengals creep back in it, which, as I mentioned in the last segment, I don't think they ever really truly threatened the Lions in that one, but... The Lions, hey, even when it doesn't look all great, they still are able to come away with the two-score win. And as I mentioned, a big part of that, forcing turnovers. And this was something that Dan Campbell mentioned in the preseason and in training camp. With that is a focal point by this defense to try to force those turnovers and give your offense more chances to succeed. Asked about that in last night's post-game press conference.
Sure was. And that's what we talk about is you know, that they, when you really start getting good at them, you start hunting for them. Our guys are hunting for them. They become contagious. And this is the first time since I've been here that we've really, that I feel like we're getting them in bunches early in the year. Normally it comes a little later. So, man, I feel like there's blood in the water, man. Our guys are starting to feel it, man. They want to be the next guy who gets the punch out of the strip or the interception, and we're hunting them. If the ball's in the air, we're going after it, and that's a tenacious defense. You know, that's what they do, and that's what we're about right now. So I thought Shep did a great job. Players, man, responded and showed up, and I thought we were aggressive. Thought we hit hard. I thought we hustled. I thought we played pretty smart football for damn near most of that game. You know, it was a couple we gave up, but it's really good, man. Defense really showed up.
Missed a chance at a little bit of a Jack Black reference right there. The tenacious D shown by the Lions in the game yesterday. And mentioned with David Montgomery having a big game in front of his hometown crowd, his family, growing up in Cincinnati. Now, obviously, was not as big of a game for him as the week before, but still making a lot of big plays in this one.
Yeah, you know, we wanted to get David going. You know, I wish we could have gotten it a little bit more. That's just kind of how the day went. But we, you know, I wanted to get him going. We wanted to get him going. because I knew this would be something special for him, and see if we can get him some more work than we did last week, you know. And look, that was a product of the week too. I mean, that was a product of how that game kind of went. We didn't want it to be that way. We want to get all our guys' touches, man. We want to get St. Brown going. We want to get Ja going and J-Mo and him and Laporta. But sometimes that's just the way it goes. And so it was good to get him a piece of that production to help us. That was good. You know, he got one throwing. He got one running. I thought he started to break it open in the second half, which is awesome. You know, started wearing down on that defense a little bit. So that was good in that regard, man. I know that's special for him.
And again, it just kind of what he rattled it off. It's tough to try to get one guy specifically going in any given game, which, I mean, that's a good problem to have if you're the Detroit Lions, because they just have so many good options. I mean, of course, Jared Goff, he's always, you know, he's been solid this whole season. And during this 4-game win streak, you know, he's back to looking like a top 5. I would even argue a top 3 quarterback in the NFL this season in terms of his passing abilities. But, I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown. You know, Jameson Williams. Jameson Williams is a guy that I feel like, you know, they really haven't gotten going to this point. You know, he can go off for a big game. Of course, Sonic and Knuckles in the backfield with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. Either one of those guys is bound to have a big game. You know, sometimes even they both have a big game. And then Sam Laporta, I thought this was obviously easily his best game of the season was yesterday. And it feels like that was another guy we were kind of waiting on. Like, man, he hasn't really had a chance to go off yet. So, but hey, when you got multiple of these guys having a big game, this offense is tough to stop. And some of my thoughts in the first segment with the offensive line. Taylor Decker, he was sorely missed yesterday. And Dan Campbell asked about his status, even potentially missing the next game against Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. You know, we're going to look at everything here. You know, certainly Skip's back, you know, so we'll look at Skip. We brought Devin Cochran today. He's a candidate. And then we'll see where Decker's at, obviously. That's always going to be our first choice, is see where Decker is. But I don't want to put Decker out there if it means that we get a couple of games and we don't have him for the rest of the year. It makes no sense. So we'll play this smart. We'll do what's right. And then next man up. If it's not him, it's next man up. Whether that is Manu again, we'll see. Or is it one of those other two guys I just mentioned?
And again, don't think it was necessarily a reflection on Giovanni Manu filling in, but just Taylor Decker, it just shows how good this guy is. You really feel his presence, not when he is playing, but when he is not playing, because boy, that left side of the offensive line, that's where all the pass rush came from. I mean, and to be fair, do you really blame the Bengals? I mean, what are they going to go after the other side with Penei Sewell? Yeah. That's a losing battle right there. So, but Taylor Decker, I mean, as Coach Campbell said, rather him be healthy in the long haul as opposed to get him for the immediate haul. Would he be a big help against Kansas City? Absolutely. But, you know, rather him be healthy in the long run. And this last point right here, last comments right here for Dan Campbell that I pulled from his post-game interview. It's something I've been saying for a couple weeks, is it feels like this team has another gear they have yet to hit. Like, they have not quite reached their full potential. As a matter of fact, they're just scratching the surface.
Yeah, I feel like we have a ton of growth left. I do. I think where you get encouraged, I know for me, you know, I said this going into, here we go, man, 2 weeks in a row. And we got two wins out of that, right? Is, you know, you can get frustrated at times about some of the ebbs and flows of the game, and we play so good, and then there's these stretches where it's, but ultimately, what I feel good about is what I already mentioned, and that's the complementary football. Man, when we need it most, our defense steps up. When we need it most, our offense steps up. When we need it most, special team steps up. Those are signs of great teams, man, to me. And so we've got that part. That's the hard part. We got that. The other stuff, we can clean that up. And I think in that regard, yes, I think we still have so much growth left. collectively. That's the exciting thing. So, yes, we do.
And, you know, definitely some things to clean up as the season rolls along. But, you know, got some tough games coming up. Going into the bye week specifically, got Kansas City next, then the Buccaneers. I mean, as long as the Lions are up by more than a field goal's worth at the end of the game, they should be able to have that one. Then they got their bye. And then coming out, you know, of course, got the Vikings. You got back-to-back tough games. Commanders, Eagles. You got the Giants. Been struggling. You got the Packers. You got the Cowboys, who, again, they're not as bad as maybe we anticipated they would be going into the season. And then got the Rams, week 15. And then a pretty light finish to the season. Steelers, Vikings, and Bears. But you know, I think these next 2 weeks going to be pretty tough for this Lions team going into the bye week. And, I mean, even if they play like they have, obviously I want them to play better than they did yesterday. But if they play the way they have in the, you know, the three wins before that, should be able to still get a couple wins. And especially if they find a way to reach that next gear, then this Lions team, we'll see. They could potentially be 6-1, hopefully, but best case scenario, obviously. 6-1 going into that bye week. But for now, 4-1. Tied for the top of the NFL world with that record. College football. Both U of M and MSU back in action this week after the bye week. U of M getting the win. MSU getting the loss against Nebraska. We're going to talk about those games, updated polls, and more to wrap up this Football React Monday with a hint of Tigers. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bella Notte Ristorante, Bud Light, and Tri-County Water. Wrapping up a Monday on the docket with some college football. So both U of M and MSU back in action after getting the bye. And U of M back at home against Wisconsin. And they get the win 24-10. Getting a touchdown in all four quarters. And another big game for Justice Haynes. 117 rushing yards with two touchdowns. Donovan McCauley, 112 receiving yards. And six catches with a touchdown. And then Bryce Underwood, of course, 19 of 28 passing for 270 yards. A touchdown and zero interceptions. U of M, 445 total yards to just 252 by Wisconsin, 5 of 12 on third down, 4 of 14 for the Badgers. Both teams with a sack and no turnovers either by U of M. So bouncing back out of the bye week with the home win, U of M now improving to 2-0 in the Big Ten. And speaking of Big Ten, Michigan State. I mean, they had a chance, but just couldn't hold on. In that third quarter, going into the fourth quarter, Michigan State leading 21-14. And then that right there at the end of that third quarter, Nebraska able to tie and then field goal, two more touchdowns in that fourth quarter. MSU made a push late, got the touchdown, did not get the two-point conversion attempt to cut it to within single digits, but again, Michigan State gave Nebraska quite a scare there, but just not able to get the job done. But Aiden Childs, although passing, just 9 of 23, two interceptions, 85 yards. I mean, he had a pretty nice scramble for a touchdown there in that third quarter. Had actually a couple of rushing touchdowns there in that third quarter. So good on that front. But MSU, again, unable to pull off a little bit of an upset. Again, Nebraska, I consider as a team 4-1. You know, if they could extend the AP polls, the ratings, out to 30, I think you'll see Nebraska. They're just bubbling underneath the top 25 in the nation. So, again, a very, very good Nebraska team. And MSU, good chance to try to knock them off, but they just couldn't hold it there in that late third and the fourth quarter. So MSU drops to 0-2 in the Big Ten. And going into next week, MSU, they should bounce back at home against a really, really rough UCLA team. Actually coming off of their first win against Penn State. Going to talk about Penn State in a moment, but meanwhile, a tough matchup for U of M. They're going to be taking on USC. Another team that was ranked. They've dropped out of the top 25. We'll talk about them again. But U of M on the road against USC. And that one, Michigan State at home against UCLA in their next matchup. Now, AP top 25. Got a new rankings out. Michigan really jumping in this latest ranking. From the top, Ohio State, they stay at number one. Miami jumps 1 to 2. Oregon falls to 3. So Miami and Oregon swapping spots there. Ole Miss stays at 4. Texas A&M jumps 1 to 5. Oklahoma drops down to 6. Indiana up to make it 7. Alabama starting to climb back up. They're at 8. Texas Tech 9. Georgia 10. LSU 11. Tennessee jumping up a little bit to 12. Georgia Tech as well, 13. Missouri jumping from 19 up to 14. There's U of M from 20 to 15. Notre Dame jumping 16. Illinois 17. BYU to 18. Lots of teams jumping up here. Virginia 19. Vanderbilt, they fall down to 20. Arizona State up to 21. Iowa State drops down from 14 to 22. And then Memphis and South Florida, 23 and 24, previously not ranked, jumping into the rankings. And then Florida State dropping down from 18 to 25. And surprising, Penn State and Texas dropping out. Why is that significant? Because those two teams were the top two ranked teams in the preseason. And now out of the top 25 rankings entirely. Of course, I mean, a loss to UCLA is an instant disqualifier from the rankings, in my opinion. That's a bad, bad UCLA football team. So Penn State, big fall for them. And of course, Texas, a lot of hype going into the season with Arch Manning, but have not quite been able to realize their potential to this point. So there you go with college football. Meanwhile, some preseason tidbits right here. Preseason done in the NHL. Red Wings end their preseason with a 6-5 overtime win over the Toronto Maple Leafs. And pretty much the full lineup that you'd expect, mostly for the start of the regular season. So a simulation game, if you will, and the Red Wings able to get that one with the overtime winner by who else but the captain, Dylan Larkin. The Red Wings able to finish 5-3 in the preseason, like that matters, of course. But moving on, NHL regular season starts tomorrow with the Florida Panthers at home against the Chicago Blackhawks to receive their championship rings for going back-to-back in the Stanley Cup. You also got the Penguins, Rangers, and Avs, Kings for the first games tomorrow for the NHL season. Red Wings getting their first game on Thursday at home against the Montreal Canadiens. Really excited to see those centennial uniforms in action. Red Wings, please start the season off strong. Meanwhile, NBA preseason getting underway. Really, in the last couple of days, starting on Thursday, Pistons have their first preseason game this evening on the road against the Memphis Grizzlies. Tip-off is at 8 o'clock, so our first look at the Pistons this year. So, and it's usually customary for the NBA. The starters usually only play for like the first quarter, and then the rest of the game is all the backups, third stringers, some G Leaguers, you know, trying to make the team and such. So that is it for Monday. Tigers off tonight. Back at it for game three of the ALDS, tied 1-1 with the Seattle Mariners tomorrow. So more baseball talk coming up tomorrow. This is On the Docket. Goodbye, everybody.
If you missed today's installment of On the Docket, podcast it at foxsports1019.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to tune in live weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM.